Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns over the air and online at koacountry1077.com and at lava1053.com. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. We're here on the radio every Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country 107.7 FM and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. And of course, you may also listen online, koacountry1077.com or lava1053.com. There's been a lot of information out there about dengue fever, but one thing most folks don't know a lot about is the insect that carries dengue fever from one person to another, the mosquito. We know they're generally annoying, but now they're actually transmitting disease, so it seems like a good idea to learn more about them. My guest today is Mike Banfield, who founded the company SpringStar in Washington State, which makes mosquito traps. Mr. Banfield has 3 degrees from Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, BC, a Bachelor of Science in Biology, and then a Master's in Pest Management, plus a Master's in Marketing. He's had extensive experience working with bugs, especially mosquitoes, with the Government of Canada, the United States Military. He's worked with Rutgers University and more. He's written numerous papers on the subject of controlling vectors or insects which spread disease to humans. He's in demand to talk about mosquitoes, and he's invented mosquito traps that have shown they can do what they're supposed to do. Mr. Banfield, aloha. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And by the way, Mike does own the company SpringStar and surely wants to sell more of the traps his company makes. But he and his team, including Dr. Emily Bess, who's a biologist and researcher and faculty member at Evergreen State College in Washington State, have been conducting seminars about mosquitoes and how to eradicate them. And they cheerfully give very specific advice on the telephone. And Mike, of course, is now here on the island, and he's taking part while here in several community meetings. Before we talked, I chatted with Hawaii County Civil Defense Chief Daryl Oliveira, who told me SpringStar has donated 500 traps, several of which Chief Oliveira and the Civil Defense team have deployed throughout Mololii, and which Chief Oliveira is testing to assess their contribution to the overall mosquito eradication effort. So first, thank you so much, Mike, for you and your company and your team being part of the effort here on Hawaii Island to help us get rid of dengue fever and mosquitoes. That's really good of you.
We appreciate being here. The important part for us was the community effort, the community people that reached out to us and asked us for their help. We've recently commercialized this technology. It's taken us about 6 years to get to the point where we could make it and ship it. It's now in Home Depot stores nationally, so you'll be able to find it in most of the stores anywhere you go. And we're just getting then geared up to start promoting the product out to communities. But the mosquito trap is different than most other mosquito control products because it works best when it's a community effort and people can take control of their own life and their own issues and use our traps that way.
Mike, what got you interested in mosquitoes in the first place? Because it's sort of an odd thing in which to be interested.
Well, when I was doing my first master's degree, I needed a job for the summer, and a friend said, hey, come over here and do some mosquito control. It was a nearby community of about 115,000 people, and it covered 25,000 square miles. I worked as the mosquito abatement officer, which was housed in the regional community health department, and we're actually funded directly from the city. And our team went out and looked for mosquitoes, monitored mosquitoes, treated mosquitoes, and we tested quite a few new products. Because at the time I was doing that, we were trying to move away from some of the more toxic and damaging compounds to something more effective and less damaging to the environment.
I still think it's unusual that you like mosquitoes so much, but I'm glad you do, because we don't know that much about them. And that's what I'd like to talk about first is mosquitoes. I found this quote in the very well-respected publication National Geographic, quote, "Beyond the nuisance factor, mosquitoes are carriers or vectors for some of humanity's most deadly illnesses, and they are public enemy number one in the fight against global infectious disease." And then the Michigan Mosquito Control Association said about mosquitoes, "Mosquitoes are by far the most dangerous animals on Earth." Mike, most annoying things like ants actually have another purpose that we understand as a good good purpose. But what about mosquitoes? Do they have a good purpose?
Oh, absolutely. They're a wonderful creature, beautiful little flies. They're important to the entire ecosystem. Remember, millions of bats survive eating mosquitoes, swallows, all the fish. If you ever like the fish, trout, guess, open them up and guess what's inside are the mosquitoes. So, you know, many of the Department of Natural Resources recognize mosquitoes as a valuable resource in our whole biosystem. But, you know, mosquitoes are kind of sometimes like your bad cousin. You know, they're doing bad things. You might love them all the same, but somehow you've got to get them from snorting off the bad stuff and get them pointed in the right direction. So, you know, be focused on which ones we control. So if we look here on your islands, you've got 8 different species of mosquitoes. Three are the bad ones, the Aedes aegypti, the yellow fever mosquito, Asian tiger mosquito, and the Japanese tidal pool mosquito. So they're all very closely related. But the other mosquitoes, you know, like they say in Star Wars, these are not the mosquitoes that you want. Let's not damage the good mosquitoes because they're an important part of your ecosystem.
But do the good mosquitoes still bite us?
Oh, yeah. Well, you're pretty tasty.
Okay. So Even the ones that are sort of good still bite us and annoy us.
They still bite us and annoy us.
But they don't give us a bad disease.
Normally not. So One of them is a vector for West Nile virus. But West Nile is certainly a lot less damaging to populations than things like dengue or some of its other related viruses.
And we don't have West Nile virus here.
I actually don't know.
Okay.
I don't think you do.
That's a good thing. But I guess in general that brings me to the reason we have dengue fever here is at this time, and I know we've had it in the past, but is that somebody who had dengue fever arrived and they got bitten by a mosquito, and then that mosquito was able to pass it on to somebody else. So somebody would have to come here with some of those diseases like West Nile or Zika or chikungunya that are spread by mosquitoes. The mosquitoes don't inherently just have these diseases, do they?
No. They have to pick it up from the host. Normally, when we talk about some of these diseases in lots of other countries, there's an alternate host. There's a primate that lives in the jungle that's got the disease through their population. The mosquito goes out and bites a monkey, comes back, bites a person, and starts the cycle. But when we see a change worldwide in temperatures and the ranges of these mosquitoes, especially Asian tiger mosquito, we're also seeing a concurrent change in the distribution of the diseases they carry. And dengue in particular, over the last 10 or 15 years, its spread is accelerating. So, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise to see it in virtually every country where Asian tiger mosquito is. Chikungunya, for instance, is showing up in southern Italy. They've had hundreds of thousands of people get sick there.
You said we have 3 mosquitoes that are bad for us. The Aedes aegypti, is that the one that's called the Asian tiger mosquito?
No, Aedes aegypti is the yellow fever mosquito. This is the mosquito that, when the Panama Canal was being built and the U.S. military was down there, 200,000 U.S. military died from yellow fever during that time. And it's why the U.S. military is one of the largest entomology research groups in the world today, and why they contribute as much as possible to trying to cure these issues. So Aedes aegypti is a little black-legged, white marks on it, irritating mosquito. It bites you and flies around, comes back and bites you again. Asian tiger mosquito is showing.
Is that the Aedes albopictus?
Albopictus.
Okay,
yes.
Go on.
So it's got these little white marks on its every elbow and every joint on it. So it looks like a little tiger, and it's from Asia. Very persistent. It's been able to change its range considerably. So, for instance, in North America, Aedes aegypti has only been staying in those parts of the country like southern Florida and Texas where the winter temperatures don't fall below zero. But albopictus, it went from Texas, it's gone all the way up to Chicago and straight across to New York City and down. So it now covers more than 65% of the U.S. population. And they're currently at risk from any one of these tropical diseases.
So those are the two that the Department of Health has talked most about. But you said there's a third. Is there a third here on the island that will spread dengue fever?
Yes, there's a third here that's this what they call a competent vector. It's capable of picking up the disease, becoming infected eventually, and then passing it on to people. So this tidal pool mosquito is from Japan. It's through a lot of the Polynesian islands, and it actually has a fairly restricted habitat. So you don't find it associated with human habitation like you do with aegypti or albopictus.
Talk about the mosquito's life cycle. Where do they live? What do they eat besides people, if they eat anything besides people? Talk more about that.
So the mosquitoes are really interesting creatures. The adult female mosquito, she needs to have a blood meal. She takes blood from a human or some other mammal that helps mature her eggs. When her eggs mature, she then goes and lays them alongside a pool of water. And both yellow fever mosquito and Asian tiger mosquito can breed in tiny little pools, as small as a thimble, as big as a water cistern, but not in open waters, not in flowing waters, not in the ocean. And they've figured out that, hey, where people live, you throw a Coke can out in the backyard, you've got a flower pot, you've got some of your landscaping that holds water. These are all great places to go lay eggs. Now, the eggs are laid in there. They're little tiny, about the size of a poppy seed, but they look like tiny little black pieces of rice. After a couple of days, they pop out into a little larva, little wrigglers. And they actually are water breathers, so they've got a little tube on their back end. They hang from the surface of the water and suck air in that way. And if you pass your hand over the shadow over that, you'll see them wiggle away and go down to the bottom of the water. And they go through four life stages and then pupate, like the chrysalis for a butterfly, except it looks like a little comma with horns. And those little horns are actually the air tubes. And it's the only pupa in the insect world that can move. So again, you pass a shadow over top of it, and these guys will wriggle away. And they'll come to the surface, pop open, you know, kind of like in the movie Alien, they'll pop open, and out will come this fully formed adult mosquito, males and females. So the males fly off, they feed on pollen sugar sources. The females might feed a little bit on pollen, mate, and once they're mated, they need to go get a blood meal to mature their eggs. What's interesting about these female mosquitoes is they understand that sometimes they may pick a bad spot to lay their eggs in. So they'll go to a lot of different locations and lay a few eggs, and they may lay up to 1,000 eggs, you know, 5 or 10 at a time in all these places.
How long a period of time does it take them to lay these 1,000 eggs?
Well, they're going to spend 2 or 3 minutes at each stop.
So they do that all at once, essentially. They just go, lay.
Well, they'll go lay some eggs, and then they'll go back and take another blood meal, because they need to mature that next set of eggs. She can't hold 1,000 mature eggs in her at a time. So she'll go through 2 or 3 cycles of laying the eggs. And this habit is what the virus said, I got a good idea. Why don't I be in a person, make them really sick, get the body to heat up so they become more attractive to mosquitoes. Mosquitoes come in and pick up some of the virus. And when the virus goes in the mosquito, it's not active right away. It takes about 8 days to become active, just like the human. So when somebody gets a virus injected into you, you've got a tiny amount through your body, and it's got to do this replication system. It takes about 8 days. So after 8 days, now you're starting to be virulent. You're starting to show symptoms normally, although some people don't show symptoms. And then the mosquito picks the virus up out of you, and she may be a new mosquito mom, hasn't been exposed to anybody, any blood before. The virus gets sucked in with the blood. And then it has to fall in through her body and replicate. And then when she goes up to the next person to get blood after laying eggs, this is that second bite, the dangerous second bite. She lands on you and she's got these little sawtooth things that drills a hole into your skin. And then she injects a tiny amount of anticoagulant to make your blood not clot. And when she does that, the virus goes into your body. That's where you've got to stop those mosquitoes. And again, so here's the cycle. 8 days before the human gets infected, 8 days before the mosquito gets infected, and then she goes and hits that next person. So some biologists with the military went, well, here's an interesting idea. Why don't we kill them at that viremic stage?
The word viremic?
Viremic. They've got the virus in them.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Yeah. And so the other part to their biology, and we have to look closely at their biology now more than we did when we had, say, DDT blasted out there and kill everything. She has this irresistible urge to lay eggs. Can't help herself. Got to do it. Got to go somewhere and drop those eggs. So if 1 out of 10 of those pools that she tries to lay her eggs in is toxic with a tiny amount of effective pesticide, we can kill her before that lethal next bite that passes on the disease. So that was the basis for the lethal ovitrap invention that the U.S. military came up with.
The mosquitoes, do they actually lay the eggs on the surface of the water or not? Because I think not.
Some species do, but these do not. They're trying to lay their eggs on the edge of the water on either piece of vegetation or some other material. So what we use in our traps is a piece of cotton velour. And as long as the velour is wet and you look inside the trap, you'll see these tiny little grains of the eggs.
How long do the female mosquitoes live? And give us a little hint as to how long we have to worry about them being infectious to us if we're around dengue people.
Well, hopefully they live as long as that first bite when somebody kills them.
Absent outside factors.
So it doesn't always happen. She'll take a week or two after emerging to get that blood meal and go lay eggs and then come back again and do it again. So she may do this two or three cycles. So somewhere between 2 weeks and 2 months. Typically, by the end of, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, they're getting pretty beat up and blown around. But after hitting somebody who's infected, it's that time period, that couple of weeks after that, before she becomes infected.
And a brief interruption. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. We're here on the radio on Hawaii Island every Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, 8 a.m. Lava 105.3 FM. Today, we're learning all about mosquitoes with Mike Banfield, who owns the company Springstar, which makes mosquito traps. If you want to listen to this or any of the previous Island Issues online, including, I think, 3 or 4 previous talk stories about dengue fever, they're all online, lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. We're talking about an infectious disease. Next Sunday, we'll talk with Dr. Drew Harvell from Cornell University, where we talk about the same kind of thing in the ocean as it's being warmed. Oh, and just a hint, Dr. Harvell delighted me when she revealed that the best student she's ever had comes from Hilo, Hawaii. That's next Sunday, but now let's get back to Mike Banfield. If a female with dengue fever lays eggs and those eggs hatch, are those eggs carriers of dengue fever? Do we know?
We do. Now, normally the answer is no. So when she gets that first blood meal from a dengue patient, she starts to form her eggs right away before the dengue's had a chance to go through her body. So those eggs won't have dengue inside of them. But there have been some recent studies in Southeast Asia where they're seeing a small percentage of the eggs with dengue in them and the larvae are hatching out with dengue. But those females that hatch from that are not very competent. They're not very strong flyers and they don't last very long. So it's not normally expected that it's going to be transovarially transmitted. And most arboviruses up until a few years ago, I'd have just said, no, it doesn't happen. But there are recorded incidences of that.
And is that true for both the Aedes aegypti and the Aedes albopictus, which are our two most serious mosquitoes here?
They're related species, and I think the studies I read were aegypti, so I don't know if it happens with albopictus, but I wouldn't be surprised if we'd see the same thing. But I expect it's unusual circumstances where that female has to be on her third or fourth meal of a dengue-infected host that's already been fed on a dengue-infested host, so somehow she's got to encapsulate that virus strand into the egg.
Let's talk about eradication. I know that what Hawaii County Civil Defense Chief Daryl Olivera says we're doing here is really a multi-pronged approach. If there's a person with dengue fever, either Department of Health or Hawaii County Department of Public Works is spraying the aqua resin around their property to get the mosquitoes on the ground. Daryl told me also that they're working with folks to make sure they either cover their catchment tanks or put bleach in or something so the mosquitoes will not be there. But traps are a third option. So from your experience, talk about how mosquitoes get eradicated and what role is played by spraying, other methods like getting rid of the nice environment for them, getting rid of the standing water, but also then traps. Talk about the different roles.
Let's just start from the initial premise. The mosquitoes don't normally get eradicated. These types of mosquitoes are problematic worldwide, especially through the tropics, because typical treatments of killing the adults, using larvicides to kill the larvae in the water, they aren't effective because these insects like to hide out in cryptic hidden habitats. So they're down underground in the drain pipes, they're up in your gutters and a little bit of water that's there. And when you go through and use an aerial spray trying to reach out and touch these mosquitoes, they're just not in a spot where they can get touched. You use a larvicide to treat the areas where you know they're breeding, you still miss hundreds of other spots where they're not breeding. So if you look at Singapore, which is a highly industrialized city, they've had dengue for many years. They've had a highly competent vector control group going in there. They spend an average of $10 a person a year on mosquito control.
Wow.
They still have dengue. And what they've been successful at is reducing it from the levels it could be at. because uncontrolled dengue is a disaster for a population. Many countries, health departments, districts, counties, abatement districts are struggling with how to effectively control these particular mosquitoes because of their habits. So being able to reach out and touch the mosquito at different parts of the life cycle is most important. So using the adulticiding sprays to kill the adults as they fly around, using the larvicidal sprays, and then the mosquito trap gets them at that stage where they've got to lay an egg. They've got to go lay those eggs somewhere. And where we've looked at those types of studies, it seems to be the most effective method that's available in conjunction with the others.
What makes the female mosquito like the trap? Why would they go there as opposed to a little pool of standing water someplace else?
The dark shape. They're attracted to these dark shapes. They're attracted to the water. And usually when you put out a container of water, it starts to grow some natural bacteria and yeast inside of it. And they put off little chemical cues that say to the females, hey, come on in here and lay your eggs. And if a female's been in there laying eggs, she may leave a cue that says to other females, hey, this is a good spot. You ought to go in here too. And so the mosquitoes that are most commonly transmitting West Nile virus, they use a little oviposition pheromone, egg laying placement marker, and they put a little drop on the eggs to say to other females, hey, if you come on over here too, because odds are if something comes in here to eat the babies, then if we have a whole bunch of babies, then before the predator gets full of food, some of us survive.
That is so interesting to me that these teeny insects have this communication system, which is really what it is.
Well, there's pheromones are everywhere. You know, these chemical communication systems are throughout the animal kingdom. I worked with a researcher in Alaska that's working on sea mammal pheromones, helped her get her patent done on that. So there's all sorts of communications that go on.
So talk more about the traps. Clearly, it's one tool, not the only tool, because people should definitely eliminate standing water any place they can from their home area. I know that. That's been totally reinforced. But talk about the traps, how you would use them in a typical urban environment if people live in a neighborhood, and how you would use them in a rural environment, because we have a lot of that here on Hawaii Island.
Yeah. Well, you know, the traps are really interesting because it gives communities and families the opportunity to take control of their own mosquito control. Eliminate the breeding sources and then put out at least 4 traps per household, 30 traps per acre is our recommendation based on peer-reviewed scientific studies that have been done around the world. Now, we're doing a really interesting project with the Center for Disease Control, the Dengue Branch in Puerto Rico. We've been using larger sticky ova traps in some of the smaller villages there. We're down to 3 traps per household into year 5, and the traps used alone have maintained more than 75% control of the mosquitoes for 5 years now.
Wow. I was going to ask you how you know they work, but I guess that is a pretty good indicator that they don't kill everything, but they sure do work.
Right. And they target specifically the insects that we're after. So the good mosquitoes get to go and do their thing. The frogs and salamanders and lizards and birds and whatever are not affected by it. One of my issues with Key West in Florida, where they had a dengue outbreak in 2010. Now, that community had a $13 million a year budget. Probably like $300 or $400 a person that lived there. They coated that marine environment with aerial pesticide sprays for a long time. It was the benefit there eventually? Yeah, maybe. But what did you lose in terms of the environmental impact?
Well, that brings me to, you already said it's really not possible to eliminate mosquitoes. Decades ago, there was an effort, a successful effort, to eliminate the Aegypti mosquito on the other islands, not this island. But I know that was back in the day when DDT was actually able to be used. Recently, on a statewide broadcast on Hawaii Public Television, the head of the State Department of Health, Dr. Virginia Pressler, suggested perhaps dropping DDT from helicopters into jungly areas. But since DDT has been banned since 1972 because of its incredibly devastating effects to the environment, talk about whether any such approach would be possible, rational, even allowed these days, and whether there's anything else that would work.
Well, DDT is really an interesting compound. It was actually used by the U.S. military as a secret war device.
Really?
Yes, and I have some of the classified films showing the use of DDT.
Where do they use it?
before they invaded any of the islands, especially the Pacific Islands, they did flyovers with DDT because they didn't want the deployed warfighters to become infected with dengue when they were fighting wars.
Wow.
DDT was highly effective, very low mammalian toxicity, very low side effects for humans and other animals, but it bioaccumulates, so everybody that can hear my voice right now has 8 parts DDT in their fat parts of their body and DDT metabolites, even if you weren't alive when DDT was banned by Nixon in 1972.
Wow. Now that is totally interesting.
So do we want to go there again? You know, third world countries are still using DDT for mosquito control. I don't know how effective it would be because it's still in the environment. And this insect resistance issue is something that we had to tackle. When we did our deployment in Key West, Florida in 2010, we got rapid control of the mosquitoes and a rapid escalation of the resistance to the pyrethroid pesticides that have been used so often, the same types of pyrethroid pesticides that you're using here.
When you say pyrethroid pesticide, what do you actually mean?
So there's
Is that like aqua resin?
Aqua resin. Okay. So there's a chrysanthemum from Africa that has a natural insecticide in it called pyrethrum. And synthetic versions of that are pyrethroids. And there's a number of them. So deltamethrin that's in the aqua resin is there. It's also, when you pick up a spray can from a grocery store, that's most likely what's in that spray can.
Meaning a spray can of insecticide?
Yes. Those compounds are being investigated by the EPA right now. And when they first announced the investigation of pyrethroids for consumer uses, the first response was that 600 consumer products were canceled by manufacturers because they didn't want to support that effort. The key effort, the most expensive effort, is what's the effect of these compounds in human endocrine systems? The answer is, well, we don't know. So let's try and see if we can be more focused on how we control mosquitoes. You know, we're here promoting our traps because of the community request and because, yeah, we're in a business to make money, but we're a family business and we felt compelled, morally obligated to come and help people. I mean, our next step is to try and get into Brazil and see if we can do something about the Zika virus that's there.
I know there are probably other companies that make traps and there are other devices on the market. Clearly, your goal would be to sell SpringStar traps, and it looks like they've been tested sufficiently to know they work. But give me some comments on other products on the market and the level of effectiveness.
The trap that we have, we actually licensed it from the U.S. military, so we have the exclusive U.S. rights to the 3 patents that are issued. There's actually nothing else like it available in the U.S. or the rest of the world. There's some sticky yova traps available. The Philippines did a fantastic job of developing a community program by using an open cup with water in it, and they put a pepper-based larvicide in there. So when the female laid her eggs, the eggs would hatch into larvae, the wrigglers would die. They saw drastic reductions in their dengue cases doing that. And they were able to use their health department in conjunction with their community services to create a community-wide program to deploy 1.4 million traps through their own population, that schools are set up as dengue risk awareness systems. You can go online today and see the dengue risk factors at each of the schools in some of the key Philippine cities. We can do that here. We've got the right community standards here and the right community integrity and cohesiveness to be able to build a community program to do that.
What about things like those buzzy things that have lights that mosquitoes or bugs fly into at night? And someone I play tennis with told me she has a device that's on the ground that draws the mosquitoes in. Talk about those kind of devices and the level of effectiveness for actually targeting this damaging mosquito.
You've touched on one of my pet peeves.
Oh.
I hate products that consumers end up buying from stores that are nothing but garbage. I'd be happy to name and name brands because it's actually a violation of federal and state laws to sell products for pesticide control that are not effective. So the citronella wristbands attract mosquitoes to you. Do not use those. The ultrasonic devices that you wear around your neck and supposedly repel mosquitoes, studies done at the University of Florida shows that it draws 25% more mosquitoes to you. Vitamin B patch, baloney. For heaven's sakes, those people that are selling that product should get a hold of their own morality and fix that. Doesn't work. They're illegal products because they're not registered for mosquito control. The Environmental Protection Agency has a fiduciary duty to make sure that if they register a product for mosquito control, they want to see the data. Show me the numbers. So we did that. And when you see an EPA registration on a product that says controls mosquitoes, it means the EPA experts have read the data that says this controls mosquitoes. Essential oils, no, I'm sorry. There are some essential oils the EPA says can be used without a federal registration. Everything on that short list, there's nothing that works for mosquitoes. None of those work. Putting catnip oil in, now you've got an unregistered pesticide with an unknown effect on humans because you didn't test it for skin irritation. One of the essential oils causes hormonal changes in young men. Pennyroyal oil induces spontaneous abortion in women. I've seen it recommended for flea collars. People are going to try and concoct something that doesn't work. When you've got a serious disease that's life-threatening, just go to the experts, EPA, the U.S. military, buy DEET, buy Picardin, and any of these other things that are labeled for use for mosquito control with an EPA registration number on it, and then use it.
Well, you bring up a good point, and I want to mention that the website for the people who make off, some versions of it contain DEET, some versions contain Picaridin, and their website goes into all the studies so that you know what you're getting, and that's really a good thing. Relative to the traps, I know that now you told me I can buy them at Home Depot, and I have checked with Home Depot here on the island, and they do carry them. Can people also order them directly from SpringStar on your website?
You can order them from springstar.net online. We put bundles together to try and kill the cost of freight as much as possible for people. And we have a community program, so we've got a bundle of 504 traps available to communities. There's a local Hawaiian association that is helping to defray the cost of those, and on some of the recent shipments, Alaska Airlines covered the air freight.
Oh, that's nice. Here.
And Pilot Air Freight was a local carrier, and they donated that as well to get the traps to people.
Well, actually, I noticed on your website that if I order, I think it's as little as like $35, it's free shipping.
Right.
So I just urge people, take a look at all the different options. Mike, one more question about the traps. I get traps, I put them around my property. Is that just it? I put them and leave them, or do I need to worry about maintaining them in any way?
You absolutely do have to maintain them. After 10 weeks, you need to replace the pesticide strip in there and clean the trap out, put in a little more fresh water, and then just keep it maintained. If you see the end of this dengue issue and you think, well, I'm done dealing with mosquitoes, take the trap, rinse it out, store it upside down until the next time this happens, because I guarantee you, it'll be back, and we hope it's not something even nastier.
Can I put the traps out in the rain? Because we have a lot of rain here.
Yeah. Now, we want you to put the traps outside, not inside your home. We're trying to get these mosquitoes, when they're going out to lay their eggs, put them in the rain. They're actually designed to refill themselves with a little bit of rain. There's an overflow hole in the side. These traps are killing the female mosquito when she comes in to lay her eggs. You won't find dead mosquitoes inside the trap. You'll see the eggs inside there, but she'll probably fly off and die. It also kills any larvae that may hatch out. So keep checking your traps. If you leave it there for a year or so, guess what? It's going to become a breeding site and make the problem worse for you.
So I have to just check it every couple months, and that makes me good.
Yeah.
Okay. Mike, these traps have pesticide in them, but what is the impact to the environment? What have you found in your studies?
Part of the reason I actually licensed this product from the military is I felt that it's one of the key products that turns this whole pest control paradigm upside down. So instead of spraying pesticide out in the environment hoping to touch the insects, you use that insect's biology, exactly how it operates every day, to come into a location and expose it to a lethal dose, but you use a tiny amount of pesticide. So this is more effective than the traditional area-wide sprays and uses 99% less pesticide. That was important for us.
Very good. Mike Banfield, we so appreciate your being here. We're out of time. What would you like to add that we haven't really talked about?
We're delighted to be here and welcomed by the community. I think the solution to this problem is in the hands of the community. You can try and ask the government to step in with its limited resources and solve the problem for you. But really, everyone has to step up and do something.
I think that's an important point, because I think we all are hoping that government will come in and just fix the problem. But a lot of what you've said today tells me that no matter what government does, the problem will not be fixed. So I need to fix it for my own property and protect myself, particularly if I'm going anywhere near any one of those hot spots, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Mike Banfield from SpringStar, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing your mana'o, or wisdom, about mosquitoes and dengue fever with us. It's been so interesting. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
And I'd like to thank our listeners for being with us. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. I will see you next Sunday morning for another Island Issues. And until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us, info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.